Hey everybody, welcome to the special edition Black Friday filibuster. And Mac, what are we doing different that it's Black Friday filibuster? What makes it special?
We're in line at Best Buy.
That is correct. We are standing in line at Best Buy, hoping to score a sweet deal on maybe, I don't know, the cable guy for $4 on DVD. So that circular looked awesome. So, but Mac and I aren't here alone. We're joined by Eric Asherschlager.
Hello.
And Daryl Loomis.
Hey, howdy.
And hopefully this catches you satiated and full of thankfulness and warm family tidings after Thanksgiving and ready to whip out the credit card and start buying stuff for Christmas. So, Mac, let's get right to you. What's been new?
Oh, well, I've had a very exciting weekend last weekend. It was here in Massachusetts. It was a Super Mega Fest. It's a comic book convention they held out in Framingham.
Okay.
And it's not the biggest convention around, but it's one of my favorites because there's lots of parking.
That's
very easy to park.
That's good.
but it was very exciting this year because the guest of honor at the convention was the one and only Stan Lee.
Yeah. Now, was he the biggest luminary to ever set foot in Super Mega Fest?
As far as I know, yeah.
Nice.
And so for me, I actually went ahead and I paid like insane amounts of money to go to the special VIP meet and greet with
Excellent.
Stan.
That's a once in a lifetime thing, right?
It is. Yeah, I got to meet Stan and I got to talk to him and shake his hand and.
He's still doing pretty well, huh?
He is. He's turning 91 next month.
Wow.
He recently had surgery, had a pacemaker installed. But is that the right word? Installed? He's got a pacemaker.
Sure. Well, now he's going to have superheroes, so he'll be like his stories.
That's right. But you'd never know it. He was
vivacious. What did you say?
He was. He really knows how to work a room. They only sold, I think, like somewhere around 50 tickets to the VIP thing. So it was just basically all of us in a room. We could ask him questions and stuff. And
what question did you ask Stan Lee?
I got to ask a question. I asked him what it was like to work with the great artist Steve Ditko.
Okay, and?
Well, because, I mean, there's all kinds of rumors out there about Ditko's eccentric behavior and stuff. But, no, Stan said that Steve was just really great to work with. He's a total delight. Never once complained about anything. Would always draw no matter what the writer asked to draw, no matter what it was. He was happy to draw it. A lot of other questions had to do with his favorites. He says he doesn't like to pick favorites, but if pressed, he'd probably say that Spider-Man is his favorite character and Dr. Octopus is his favorite villain. And his favorite battle he ever wrote was a lesser-known one. There was a fight between Daredevil and the Submariner, which ended. Yeah, well, but it ended where Daredevil didn't win the fight, but he did earn the Submariner's respect.
Wow, nice.
And that's why Stan liked that one.
That's worth the Submariner's respect. That's nothing to sneeze at.
So did you tell him your name was Mac McIntyre? Because he must have loved that alliterative.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
You're practically an alter ego.
That's right. He did mention he loves the alliteration.
Yes, he does.
Someone asked him what his favorite writers are, and he says Edgar Allan Poe is one of his favorites because of the alliteration. A lot of questions about the Marvel movies and his cameos. He said his favorite cameo is the one he recently filmed for Iron Man 3, and he was just about to spoil it and tell us what it was, but his various handlers were like, no, you can't spoil it. I was this close to learning what the Iron Man 3 cameo was, but he assures us it's going to be a good one.
Nice.
So, and then the next day, thanks to my swanky and very expensive VIP pass, I was able to get to the front of the line for an autograph.
Wow.
And I have a Spider-Man print that's just a drawing of Spidey against a white background, which is perfect for an autograph.
So. Now, did you get that framed? Get that bad boy framed?
I will. Yeah, I'm going to wait till after the holidays, but I'm definitely going to get it framed. That's why I chose a print instead of a book, so I can put it up on my wall.
Wow, sounds like you had an eventful weekend there.
It was, yeah. I mean, I can't believe I got to meet Stan, and it was very exciting.
Did you say, Stan, why did Iron Man 2 suck? Did you ask him that by any chance? any other Super Mega Fest news to report on?
I just spent a lot of money on other stuff as well. Just bought a bunch of discount trades and a bunch of old Silver Age DC stuff that I've been looking into lately. So
nice.
Yeah, just kind of a big shopping bonanza.
Very good. Very good. All right. Anything else to add from your exciting week?
I think that should do it. Yeah, it's pretty hard to top meeting Stan Lee.
Yeah, you got nothing to match up with that. So, but good luck, Daryl. What can you do?
Well, it's not that exciting. For me, it is, I guess, kind of, just because I revel in this kind of garbage. This week, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm reviewing Record 3. So it pressed me into watching the first two Record movies again. Have any of you guys seen them?
No, is that Magnolia? That's Magnet Magnolia stuff, right?
No, they're these Spanish first-person horror movies.
It's just spelled REC on the
REC. I thought Magnolia releases them though. They might.
I'm not sure. It's Sony that's doing Record 3, I don't remember who did the previous two. But the first one it's reiterated watching it again. It's the gold standard of first-person horror, and part of that is because it, unlike Cloverfield or Blair Witch or what have you, it's actually a professional photographer in the story.
Oh, okay.
And so the guy knows how to hold a shot, knows how to get a shot, and it's not just shaking around, making people sick. It's first person, and he's recording everything, but he's actually credited as a second director, and is the director of Record 3, Pablo Plaza, I believe is his name. And, it's frightening, and it's well shot. It's absolutely terrifying. And then I hated the second one.
Why exactly is the first one terrifying?
The way that it works is basically a question of complete unknown as to what's going on. Everything looks like zombies, but it's a lot of there's a lot of very slow scenes where, say, an old woman is out in the distance. It all takes place in one very, very claustrophobic apartment building. So out in the distance in a hallway, there's some old woman, and she's sort of shambling towards them, but they don't know what's going on yet, right? And as she gets closer, you see she looks kind of weird, and then as she gets into striking range, she strikes. And you don't ever really – I mean, you see it coming because it's a horror movie, you know, but the way that it works and the slowness and then the sudden quickness is very effective. There's one of the better scares in it that I've seen in a long time, in which it's just simply a shot from the lobby of the apartment building, and a firefighter who's gone upstairs suddenly gets thrown downstairs, and he just falls down the stairwell, not down the stairs, but down the stairwell, and just cracks his face, and it's completely out of nowhere. So there's a lot of those sorts of things going on. Not so much jump scares as just sudden bursts of violence. And it works really well. The main character who's, recording a, 48-hour style program, about following firefighters around on a regular night. And she's very appealing. The cameraman doesn't say anything, so it's basically like your eyes. And all in all, it works extremely well on basically every level. The first time I saw it, which was just after Quarantine had come out, but I hadn't seen Quarantine yet, I watched it, and I paced around my house for nearly 2 hours.
Wow. That's saying something because you've built up quite a tolerance for this.
Yeah, and it's a question of tension. It's not gross necessarily or anything like that. It's just such high tension that it wound me up like few movies ever have.
Well, sounds better than High Tension, actually.
Yeah, I like High Tension, but it has a better ending than High Tension. Sure. And then the second one I was really excited for because it was it took place immediately after the end of the first one. It's the cops going into the building to check out what the hell just happened to all of their forces. And I was very excited about it, but then I hated it. When I read reviews of it, everybody seems to like it, both critically and from a fan perspective, everybody talks very highly of it, and I don't get it. They betray their gimmick from the first one with the professional photographer, with having helmet cams on all the cops, which doesn't make any sense why they'd have helmet cams. I mean, it just it's one of those things about first person horror movies that bother me. Like, why is the Cloverfield guy still shooting when he's being attacked by a damn dinosaur? Drop the camera and run. Cameras are heavy. And so it sort of betrays that there's no good reason why this stuff is going on. But when I saw it in the theater, it got a standing ovation. It's also kind of disjointed. There's a pair of stories that goes on. Watching it this time, I actually liked it a little bit better, but I still don't understand where it's coming from. But it does make me want to see Record 3 for one reason, because it's not first person, apparently. And is more of a comedy.
Oh, really?
Surrounding a wedding that's apparently going on at the same time as the events of the first movie.
Is Nia Vardalos in this one?
I don't know. So I'm interested in that. Outside of that, there's not a whole lot going on. Parks and Rec has been up a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I've been happy about that.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Up a few ticks.
Not
John
great.
John Ralphio did a lot.
Yeah, John Ralphio's return was just fine, just fine. And you know, he and Ron Swanson have a great interaction.
Yes.
Together in general. So there's that. But you know, mostly just catching up on old horror since it's Thanksgiving and all.
Nice, Eric.
See, not a whole lot. I know I asked you offline if you've been keeping up with Fringe, and you said you were behind.
I'm way behind.
What? So I will. So I won't say anything about that.
Yeah, this is pretty. You've eclipsed me.
I know.
It's re-debuting. Where is it? Where is it on now?
Oh no, it's still on Fox, I think. Right? I mean, I've been watching it on Hulu, but yeah, this is the final season. It's a 13 episode season, yeah. Right? Okay, so we are 6 or 7 episodes in, I think, now.
Okay.
So, yeah, some crazy stuff is happening. It's a very different kind of season. I do want to talk with you about it once you watched it, but we will save that for another time. And I know you you may be talking about this another time. Anyway, sorry, not a whole lot TV-wise. I haven't met the movies. The most I can come up with, and it ties a bit into what I'm reviewing this week, I watched the new Blu-ray version of E.T. the other night.
I hear it's great.
Now, is that part of your monster set?
Which, it is, yeah.
Holy
it is.
Cow. You got this Thanksgiving is cut out for you.
It is.
And like, yeah, I was looking through the movies, and they're just so like disparate movie. You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's like the total buffet of movies.
We'll talk about that in a minute, Dave. I'm gonna call out specifically E.T. because it is gorgeous. This new Blu-ray transfer is it's just stunning. I love it when Blu-rays
comes together.
Yeah, I love it when a good Blu-ray. I love it when basically whoever's putting a Blu-ray out just lets the film be the film, lets the grain exist, just lets the detail that's in the film kind of come to life, and doesn't try to coax new things out of it with edge enhancement and all the digital nastiness that I've come to despise. And this is just a beautiful picture. And it's been a long. I've seen E.T. so many times. I think I saw it the last time just a few years ago, but. You know, watching it again, there's still things that I pick up on that I didn't really remember. And it just struck me, this time struck me so much how, it really is, it's a movie from the kid's perspective, and you get that every once in a while, but this is probably one of the most successful examples of really kind of capturing what it's like to experience the world as a kid. It was interesting watching it with my wife, who hadn't seen it since she watched it at age 4 and was terrified by it, and left the movie theater crying. And it's interesting because in her recollection of the movie, she got scared when the NASA guys hurt E.T. And watching it again, I realized that they don't actually hurt E.T. Like he's dying because he's he needs to go home. And so they're actually trying to help him. But from a kid's point of view, that's what they're doing. These adults coming in and messing everything up. And Spielberg really kind of captures that so well, just that perspective of looking at the world and being scared in some ways as a kid. The fact that we never see these guys are faceless for so much of the movie. And all you see is the one guy in his keychain that keeps rattling. Being able to see it on Blu-ray just I think really brings a lot of those details to life, and I really, really recommend people check it out. It's a stunner.
All right. Now, was this part of your set? I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's in the set.
And is it available for separate purchase too?
Yeah, yeah. Everything
has
everything
it been out for a while. Has all this stuff been out for a while?
ET's been out for a little while.
Yeah. Okay.
ET came out in August, I think.
Okay.
Maybe. Or I think of Jaws. Jaws came out in August. That's also part of the set. And that's another one of the kind of real standouts.
Yeah.
Another Spielberg movie. I think that's probably no accident that the Spielberg movies in the set that I'm reviewing are among the best. But again, we'll talk about that in a minute, Dave. We call that a tease in the industry. What have you been up to?
Yeah, you've been up to very good. Yeah, I can't. I'm just going over these movies. It's like Despicable Me and then The Breakfast Club. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. All right. Good arrangement. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Nice. Okay. Well, on the other side, as far as Blu-rays, where people putting them out, don't let the movies be the movies. I recently purchased, not even purchased. It was free. I had credit. It was cheap. I got myself the Star Wars Complete Saga on Blu-ray.
Oh.
So my old, and that's old, you know, obviously that's old news, but I'm tying into new news in the fact that Lawrence Kasdan, right, has been pegged to write like 3 or 4 movies or something like that. So he's back in the Star Wars fold. He's still alive. And having watched Empire Strikes Back, that was the first movie I put in, and just a fantastic movie, obviously, but a beautiful looking Blu-ray. It made me legitimately excited that Kasdan's back in the fold, because this guy produced not only the best Star Wars movie, but one of the best science fiction movies ever made. You know, so.
Yeah.
It's a huge Blu-ray set, and we all obviously know the controversies surrounding it, so we won't get into that. I will say, just having watched Empire, it is, you know, it's really good looking, really great looking Blu-ray, and I listened to some of the commentary, and that was a lot of fun. So I can't really complain, because I got it for like 40 odd bucks or something, which is a good deal.
Well, Lawrence Kasdan isn't actually that old. I thought he was a lot older than that. He was only born in 49.
All right, so he's got tread left on the tires, as we say.
So I apologize to Lawrence Kasdan for implying that I thought he was dead.
Well, I'm just glad. I think it's that's good on Disney. You know, I'm sure they may have wanted to tag the Transformers guys, but thankfully, or Friedberg and Seltzer from the Date movie. But no, Kasdan. So that makes me feel pretty good. So next up is just to see who kind of helms it, and I kind of stand by this that I'm interested to see what's going on, because I didn't have much connection with the franchise after the prequel trilogy, so bring it on. That's what I say. Bring it on.
Yeah, Disney's always been good with the properties they buy, so I mean, I have a lot more confidence in what they'll do with Star Wars than I would with Lucas doing it.
I agree.
That's the seventh movie.
That's the rub of it. I agree.
Anyway, we're not talking about Dan Harmon being fired from Community. We're talking about a franchise that a lot of people have given up on getting new life. So
right. Hey, speaking of Community, Chevy Chase gone, huh?
Is he?
Yeah, breaking news. I just my wife alerted that to me like an hour or so ago.
Okay, then they can bring back Dan Harmon and shut up about it.
He is gone. So I guess I know they filmed the majority of their episodes, but like save for a couple. But yeah, effective immediately. Adios. So. All right, so there you go. Let's go right back around the horn, Mac. What do you have coming up?
Yeah, reviewing for the site. I guess this is a week for like huge box sets, because I've got this just gigantic box over here of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Michael told me about that, because I had offered to, if it was so huge to ship, I said, I'll pick it up for you, but he said you got on top of it. So I'm excited to see what you think, because that's a badass looking set.
It is. It's 23 DVDs with all 193 episodes.
But how is it packaged, Matt?
And it's packaged in a box shaped like the Turtles' van.
Fantastic.
That is pretty badass.
It is. And the wheels actually work, so you can roll it around on your kitchen floor.
All right, so you can drive your turtle van my full house package.
That's right. Yeah?
So I can set up my full house, and you can drive your turtle van. someone with the Dark Knight Rises bat pod can fly. Them over.
Yeah. I think the King of Queens had a van set too, so you could create quite the little fleet of.
That's right.
a village of nothing but Blu-ray DVD box sets.
That would be a good challenge. Yeah, like all the gimmicky packaging. You know.
Yes.
That's a good ambush topic.
4,400 minutes is a lot of viewing.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
It's been some exhausting viewing, some late nights, marathoning all these episodes. But
how do they hold up?
Well, you know, my one gripe about the show has always been that, you know, it's Ninja Turtles. It should be an action comedy. Instead, the show will almost leans way too far into comedy with very little action. It's like if the Turtles have a choice between either taking out a bad guy with a roundhouse kick or the pie in the face, the animators, they will pick the pie every single time.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, they're the actual martial arts action and the stuff with, you know, the actual fighting and the world's going to end, that's very few and far between.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
They saved any like action set pieces only for the season finales. And for pretty much the whole rest of the series run, it was just comedy and slapstick and all the puns. You remember all the bad puns on that show and breaking the fourth wall gags. And so,
how do they compare to the comics?
Well, it depends on which comics. The original indie comics that it's based on were a lot darker and meaner. And just,
okay, that's kind of what I remember, but it's been 20 years.
Yeah, because they were very satirical, too, because it's still like, you know, they're Ninja Turtles. But it's kind of a satire of, you know, violence in comics and that it's just so over the top, blood and gore and stuff. But that series only lasted about like 12 issues. And then there have been tons of other comics since it became popular, of varying quality. But even though I complain a lot about the show, though, I do kind of enjoy it still, despite its flaws. I think the best thing about Ninja Turtles is simply that it is the Ninja Turtles. There's just something about this world and its mythology that's just sort of is right and feels comforting and is exciting about it. So, despite my complaints, yes, I do like the show.
All right. Good. I have to get you off this podcast because you got work to do. So, going in. Daryl, what do you got?
The one big thing I have this week is an old favorite of mine. I'm doing the I'm reviewing the Blu-ray disc of Sunset Boulevard, old movie from 1950 with Gloria Swanson and William Holden. And on the one hand, it's watching it. It's probably been 10 years since I've watched it. It's a brilliant movie, one of my all-time favorites, and no question, a classic. A classic of cinema, but what strikes me here watching it today is how much in the irony, in the world of irony and snark and meta that we live in today, it predates that by 62 years. It's a movie about. You know, Gloria Swanson's plays Norma Desmond, an old science fiction or old silent movie star, who's trying to make who believes she's trying to make a comeback, but she's delusional. And it's complete fiction, but it's got smatterings. Cecil B. DeMille's in it. Buster Keaton's in it. It's got smatterings of old film history everywhere. It's got a scene from one of Gloria Swanson's old silent movies that's just attributed to this Norma Desmond character. It's kind of a noir. It's kind of like Citizen Kane in the way that it's a sort of a family drama noir. And the Blu-ray is freaking brilliant. Mm. The transfer's perfect. It's 62 years old. There's not a flaw there. And it's got 2.5 hours of extras plus a commentary. And some of that stuff most of that stuff is recycled from old releases, but it basically collects everything that's ever been put out on DVD for it on one disc. And it's one of the best Blu-rays I reviewed this year.
Oh, nice. Is that golden gavel material? Is it worth a vote or two?
It's worth a vote for me, at least. It's probably going to be a Golden Gavel nomination from my end.
Gotcha. All right, nice. All right, Eric, want to give it to your...
Let's talk about it. So this week I'm reviewing the Universal 100th Anniversary Collection, and as you may have seen if you've been following along in the cover art gallery over the past year, to celebrate its 100th anniversary, Universal Studios has been putting out the series of Blu-rays that are branded with their 100th anniversary logo. And some of them are brand new restorations. There's a handful of them that they've gone in and kind of from the ground up, made these really impressive Blu-rays out of. Some are just, you know, kind of middle of the road, and some of them are just repackaging of older Blu-rays of varying quality. And this collection is 25 of those releases. Really no rhyme or reason. They just kind of pick things. I think
sure
our
seems like that's true.
There's sweet stuff.
It is here. I will read the list so you know what we're talking about. So in chronological order, this set includes All Quiet on the Western Front, Dracula. This was included. Dracula and the Spanish version of Dracula in the Blu-ray set.
Better.
And they're both included in the recent Universal Monster set.
Which is Buck, awesome.
Yeah,
by the way.
Really great. Buck Privates, Abbott and Costello movie. Pillow Talk, Doris Day and Rock Hudson, I think. Spartacus, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Birds, American Graffiti, The Sting, Jaws, Animal House, E.T., Scarface, Back to the Future, The Breakfast Club, Out of Africa, Do the Right Thing, Field of Dreams, Jurassic Park, Apollo 13, The Fast and the Furious, Born Identity, Mamma Mia, and Despicable Me. So all over the map. All over the map. It's really just this random collection of movies. But
That's like, I mean, that's really filling a lot of holes, both maybe in stuff you never got around to seeing before, but your home video collection too, right?
I mean, it really is sort of an instant Blu-ray home video collection. And I think and I think if you kind of took a poll and kind of showed this list to, you know, maybe people who listened to the show and said, would you like to own all of this? They would say, well, maybe half of them or three quarters or something. There's a few that probably won't appeal to any of us, but at the same time, there's someone else out there who really loves Mamma Mia or, isn't all interested in All Quiet on the Western Front, no matter how good this restoration of this 1930 anti-war movie
is.
I'm
in the mood for watching Spartacus and Fast and the Furious doubleheads.
Well, that's the thing, though, is if someone's going to be buying this for, say, Jurassic Park, is that same person really going to sit down and watch Pillow Talk?
Probably not. I think I've figured out who this is for, though. This is for, okay, say your cousin's family just got a Blu-ray player, and they all like different kinds of movies, and they've got a 7-year-old who would like to watch Despicable Me, and maybe stereotypical and sexist here, maybe the daughter wants to watch Mamma Mia, maybe the dad wants to watch Spartacus, maybe the mom wants to watch Pillow Talk, whatever. I mean, you've got kind of something for everybody.
There you go.
I think there are people who are going to have a tough time justifying it. It is an expensive set. I mean, I think the list price is $350. You can find it for a lot cheaper than that. So it makes an expensive gift, but it's also kind of cool. Like it has some really good discs in there. Like Daryl said, the Dracula discs. Dracula disc is great. Jaws and E.T. are both stunning. There are some that aren't so good. It really is a middling quality of movies, you know, a variety of quality of movies and variety of, you know, quality of transfers. But each disc comes with all of the extras that came on the individual releases. And like you asked before, Dave, these are all available essentially individually. There are a few of them that are only available on sets, right now. Like Jurassic Park is only part of the Jurassic Park trilogy in the States. Back to the Future, I think, is still only part of the Back to the Future trilogy in the States. I know there are different region releases. And The Birds currently only available as part of the Alpha set, although I think it's supposed to get a single disc release. So at least Universal didn't, you know, pull the move of, like, holding one movie back and making it only part of this collection, which would have been, you know, really dumb. So, you know, you're free to buy it or not buy it. I'm happy to have it. I think if you had, you know, just the right person in your life who you love so much that you want to spend that much money on them, but, you know, not enough to have gotten them into Blu-rays before now, this is, this is kind of perfect. So, it's an odd recommendation, but I think it's pretty cool. So,
all right. I've got nothing approaching that interesting, so I'm going to give you Power Rangers Samurai Christmas Together Friends Forever. So I have, once again, like the Halloween special, three episodes, one of which is Ta-da! Clip Show. So again, you got a clip show out of these three, and then you have Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, I'm Dreaming of a White Ranger, and Power Rangers Zeo, A Season to Remember. And the set is worthwhile because of that, A Season to Remember, which is just fantastic. I don't know who the bad guy is for Power Rangers Zeo, I can't remember, but he launches a spell on the Power Rangers that makes them all incredibly intolerant of other cultures' holiday celebrations. And since the Power Rangers crew is extremely multicultural, that leads to tension. Also leads to one of my all-time favorite dialogue exchanges on television. Following the spell being cast, their Jewish friend says, "Oh, what was I saying? Oh yeah, so the menorah." And then the Red Ranger says, "You know, I don't care about that. The only thing that's important is a Christmas tree. So why don't you go out there and cut one down and bring it back to me?"
What a wow.
Fantastic dialogue exchange. And then there's a girl, you know, one of the girls celebrates Kwanzaa, and they just start arguing about all this stuff. And then it takes a little girl singing a Christmas song or a holiday song or some generic song. It's not committing to any specific celebration. But a little girl sings a song and snaps them out of it, and they eventually come to...
Whew. Thank goodness.
Acknowledge it. But, yeah, that was great. That made it worthwhile. So there you go. And for a Power Rangers disc, there are next to no giant monster laser battles at all. Like, really? Maybe in the clip show. In the I'm Dreaming of White Ranger, Lord Zed invades the North Pole, kidnaps Santa Claus, and forces Santa's elves to start making evil toys. Power Rangers zap over there, and because they can't use their powers in North Pole for some reason, they defeat the bad guys in a snowball fight.
Jesus.
So, there you go. Yeah, well, so. Oh, and by the way, I have the complete series of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers staring me in the face I got to review as well, so there's that. Yep. So that's it. That's what I got for you. So, Mac, move us on to the next phase.
Sure thing. We are going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. And you at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, hit the tab for DVD releases, and from there we'll scroll down and click on the link for the cover art gallery for November 27th. And we're just going to talk about whatever we see on the list here.
That's kind of sorry.
Yeah, let's see. Well, we've got Men in Black 3 is out.
Yeah, Men in Black 3.
Paranorman is out, which I kind of curious to see that one a second time.
We got the Prometheus to Alien Evolution, which apparently is the whole set.
That does not look
which
like
actually would be kind of cool.
That looks like a region, some other region release.
Oh yeah, it's Region B. It is Region B. Now that I look at it. Never mind, Americans.
It looks like the Americans might also be missing out on Arachnoquake, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of your wheelhouse there.
I know. Arachnoquake, yeah.
Arachnoquake versus Snowmageddon.
Well, there's also Quantum Apocalypse, apparently quantum physics destroys the world.
Oh, yeah.
Quantum Apocalypse. What's there, five sets of Stargate Atlantis?
Yeah, it looks like, is that the whole series, five seasons?
Yeah, it must be the whole series.
Man, I'm struggling here. Struggling.
Yoga videos, which is pretty rad.
A lot of B-Westerns. We got one with Red Berry. Nobody ever remembers him. He was like a huge movie star back in the day. There's this thing. I had to look this up because I wanted to see what it was. It's called Flood Streets. The cover art is just crazy. He has this guy with his face painted white, and he's wearing a hat and roller skates. So I looked it up, and unfortunately, it's not something insane. It's just this indie drama about New Orleans after the hurricane, but crazy looking cover art.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this segment is dead.
This week.
I do like 12 Christmas wishes for my dog.
Yeah, I can think of
it. Look who's been naughty and nice. Fred Willard is in it.
The eyes are natural.
Yikes. Yeah, that's those are human eyes pasted on a dog's face. All right, so interrelease, please, how do you release of the week, Mac?
Let's see, how about Yoga Body Hip Opening Flow?
Good. That's good.
It's like a haiku. It's like a dirty haiku.
I had one that was kind of sleazy sounding. Where is it? I don't know. I'm just going to go with the easy one, Hot in Cleveland.
Oh, that's not a tantalizing release, I don't think. Eric?
I'll go with luck, maybe. You know, getting lucky.
That's good. That works. I this doesn't make sense, but I just want to say the title. Vigilantes of Boomtown.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Our ambush topics for this Black Friday filibuster, you know this works, random topics toward each other. Daryl, why don't you kick us off?
So, you know, it's pretty obvious, I guess, but given the spirit of the season, what's your favorite Thanksgiving dinner scene?
I'm
trying to remember any Thanksgiving dinner scene here. Come on, Saved by the Bell, don't fail me now!
You can open it up to holiday dinner scene if you want to.
Okay, I might have to, but see, I don't want to back down from the challenge. I'm trying to think of even this very special Thanksgiving episode. Do they have a lot of special Thanksgiving episodes?
Not as many as the other holidays.
Yeah, Christmas usually got all.
There are some. Yeah.
And if you want to just say all of Thanksgiving, then you know, I would understand.
Man. Okay, I'm going to go with Saved by the Bell, and I'm going to go with holiday dinners because I had nothing else. But I got to go with a very special holiday episode where the Morrises open their homes to the homeless family, and they enjoy it. And they enjoy, you know, they, I don't even know if they, we see them enjoying a Christmas meal. You know, I got to redact that because they don't have a dinner. They don't have a dinner together. So I'll go with the layup, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
There you go.
Of course.
There's turkey there, which is pretty great.
Yes.
So on Saved by the Bell, they don't even feed the homeless people?
They don't. They play the piano.
What?
I sing a song. They play piano and sing a song.
So Zach hooks up with the homeless dogs,
yes.
But they don't feed them.
Correct.
That is lame. I'll go with a running bit on How I Met Your Mother, which we still watch. They had their Slapsgiving episodes.
That's right.
Which has something to do with a slap bet wherein there is one slap remaining, and I think it's Marshall who's holding it over Barney. If you watch How I Met Your Mother, you know what I'm talking about.
Because I'm sitting over here going, what?
Words. Okay, you, Submariner, whatever. Just
let's see. All right, I looked this one up here. The Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. Charlie Brown and the gang decided to hold their own Thanksgiving dinner, but instead of turkey and stuff, they had to make do with whatever food was lying around.
That's right. I remember that.
So the recipe for that Thanksgiving dinner was two slices of buttered toast, pretzel sticks, popcorn, and jelly beans.
Yeah, that was a good – that was a fun Charlie Brown, now that I'm thinking about it. That was fun.
Yeah. Peppermint Patty was not on the Atkins diet that year.
No, and I think they wind up abandoning it because they get invited at the last minute to a Thanksgiving dinner.
I think what happens, we'll probably end up watching this tomorrow, yesterday, when you're listening to this. I think it's Charlie Brown basically gets guilted into inviting people over to his house for Thanksgiving somehow. Like Peppermint Patty assumes she's invited to his house.
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
He has to make this thing, and then, yeah, then they get saved.
And everybody yells at poor Charlie Brown for such a cruddy meal. Because,
then,
face it, it's pretty cruddy.
Then maybe the Red Baron, I forget. We'll find out.
I wish that would happen so bad. So it's me?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going with if you've ever watched The League, the FX show about fantasy football, about a fantasy football league of old friends.
I saw that review the first season. Yes,
I like the show, and in season three they have a Thanksgiving episode, which works out because of the, you know, Thanksgiving football games and all that kind of business. But the plot of the episode is that the daughter of the main husband and wife character brings home a guinea pig, her class guinea pig, to feed over the Thanksgiving holiday, and through circumstances and whatever, it winds up escaping and burrowing itself into the raw turkey, which then gets cooked. And they cut into it, and it's, of course, like a turducken with turkey and guinea pig. I can't tell you how much I love that. The idea of cutting into a turkey and having a guinea pig as your stuffing.
That's what the holidays are all about. Right?
Yeah, that's the same thing as me watching record. I have no my issues with the holidays are myriad, so I'll just go on.
All right, I will go next. Hollywood remake that totally misses the point.
Well, there's quite a few.
There's a lot. That's a big topic.
Just last night I rewatched Tim Burton's Dark Shadows.
Yes.
I was thinking maybe I should give it a second chance. It's Tim Burton. Maybe I should, now that the expectations have died down. But oh man, it's such a mess. And watching it the second time, the movie almost had me. I was thinking, oh well, maybe this isn't that bad. And then the ending of the movie happened, and I was like, oh my, it's that bad. Just this constant stream of just crazy randomness that has nothing to do with anything going on in that ending, and it's just makes my head hurt.
I hate to pile on to Tim Burton here, but I'm going with his Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Which goes everywhere but where that movie should go.
Have you figured out the ending yet?
They figure it out?
Yeah, I mean, do you understand why it was made? Where the point was of the ending?
Cash grab?
Okay.
The two-disc DVD has a little chart that supposedly explains the ending.
Oh, all right. Because a film is well made when it requires a chart to explain it.
Right. I'm gonna make this a Tim Burton trifecta. I'm gonna go with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah. Not necessarily because the Gene Wilder version was the definitive version, because the book, the Tim Burton version, pretty close to Roald Dahl's original.
Yeah.
But then at the end, they go into this weird direction where he has to explain the history of Willy Wonka and his troubled relationship with his dentist father and all this ridiculousness. I didn't like the movie in general, but that really kind of pushed it over the edge for me.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Well, okay, I was going to say Godzilla, because that was on the 1998 Godzilla with Matthew Broderick, which is just an abomination and totally misses the point. Totally and utterly misses the point. But since it's a layup, and since you guys have gone three Tim Burtons, I'll go with a fourth. It's a little looser. It's a movie I like, but it's Batman. And, just totally missing the point of Batman.
Really?
Batman does not fire missiles at bad guys and kills them, right? I mean, that's just the one major thing that stuck out. But it's so central to the Batman character. I mean, Batman's dropping guys into vats of acid, raking them with his machine gun fire, throwing them down belfry steps to their death.
That's so true.
He's pretty much a homicidal maniac in that. Again, a movie I enjoyed, but as far as missing the point, I just think the whole not taking a life is central to Batman's character. So, and plus, might as well pile on Tim.
Yeah. In your face, Tim Burton.
Yeah. All right, Eric, what do you got?
All right. Also, keeping in line with the season, Gifts That Keep On Giving. Could be a gift in a movie. Could be a movie that is a gift that keeps on. Whatever it is, that's wide open.
It's probably not exactly what you're thinking of, but the gift that keeps on giving in my mind is the gift of Chucky to the little kid in Child's Play, because that little bastard will never die. And, he has his own kids, he has a wife, he's got a whole thing going on. He just comes back year after year to terrorize people, and, my heart goes out to him.
I'm going to say...
They should make another Chucky movie. I think it's time.
They should. The last couple are actually a lot of fun.
The Bride of Chucky, was that the
Bride
last one?
Seed of Chucky.
Seed of Chucky was the last one. And those were both just straight-out comedies, and I liked them.
Yeah.
They were fun.
That seems like the end game for a lot of, because Freddy eventually turned into a comedy, more or less, right?
Yeah, well, by the second one, Freddy turned into basically a comedy.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they all started from extraordinarily dark places.
Yeah, but the jokes and all, Freddy became sort of the template for all of those horror franchise killers, where they just start making jokes before they kill, like they're all Arnold Schwarzenegger here or something. So by the time you get into the third or fourth installment of so many of these, it's all just one-liners all through the place.
Well, it's like with any movie monster, you know, where you get used to the monster and then it stops being scary. So then the filmmakers take in other directions. But if you, you know,
or one direction.
Yeah, you know, you go with comedy or try to turn it into action or, you know.
Yeah.
So, because they stop being scary after a while.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, I guess for me, I'm going to say the movie Ghostbusters, because I've been watching a lot of Ghostbusters recently. It's been playing on, like, the Encore HD channel here, and I just always stumble across it. And I just, every time it's on, I just have to settle in to watch some Ghostbusters. So, I don't know, it's just one of those movies that just keeps on giving me joy, no matter what, and I don't know why. I think I just love that.
Well, because it's awesome, bro.
It is awesome. Oh, yeah. It's awesome. It's just so catchy. There's just something just so addictive just to watch, because it's like, oh, this, you know, my favorite part's coming up, or aim for the flat top. That's a great line right there. So thank you, Ghostbusters. You're a constant gift of joy.
I guess mine's a little similar to Daryl's there, because in Gremlins, Mogwai Gizmo was originally a gift for Billy. Mm. And of course, then the multiplying and the eating after midnight and the Gremlins take over the whole town. So things escalated.
Yes, they did. And then that turned into a comedy straight away.
Yes. Well, it kind of always was from the beginning. I mean,
But Gremlins 2 was basically a straight-ahead slapstick comedy.
Totally.
All right, that kind of screwed me over because mine was Gremlins. All right. All right, that's the game. There's only one other gift in a box I can think of at the moment, and that is from the end of 7. It's just you took me to a dark place, because without Gremlins to tether me, I just immediately go to terrible, terrible things, which I still won't spoil, just in case.
Gift that keeps on giving in your nightmares.
That's right.
Exactly.
All right, Mac, take us away.
Okay, next topic. When two good guys fight one bad guy.
All right, now I gotta figure out what Mac's gonna pick. So
I know what Mac is. Maybe
I have a list here. So
yeah, okay.
So if you one that's on my list, I've got backups.
Oh, good.
So two good guys, one bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys, bad guy.
I'm going with the Double Dragon movie.
Okay.
Do you have to?
I do. It has Alyssa Milano, and you know, how can you not? How can you not go to Double Dragon?
I didn't know Alyssa Milano was in. I don't think I've ever actually watched that.
It's awesome.
So it's a 2-on-1, the Double Dragon versus
the whole thing is 2-on-1.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, okay. It's the layup, but I got to go with it because it is the single greatest example of it. And Mac, you know what I'm thinking? The Raid.
Yes.
That's final battle scene in The Raid. Just one of the all-time greatest choreographed fight scenes, but it's also a 2-on-1 barn burner.
It is, yeah. That one bad guy is just, like, unstoppable.
Unstoppable, yeah.
Just me? Let's see. I'm trying to remember if there is a point at the final fight scene in Scott Pilgrim, and I should know this, when Knives and Scott are both fighting Gideon at the same time.
I think so.
If not, I know all their names, so that should count.
I think at the very end they wind up double-teaming him a little bit, but I think there's two separate fights going on.
Just for a second. Oh, they do, yeah.
That counts.
It totally counts, yeah. Totally. It's 2-on-1.
Yes.
Or Billy and Gizmo fighting Stripe at the end of Gremlins.
Boy, that doesn't speak well highly of Billy, does it?
Back to me?
Yep.
Well, you all thought I was going to go with Star Wars Episode 1.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's a 2-on-1 fight too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the famous lightsaber battle at the end of that. But a few years after I saw Episode 1, I caught a glimpse of an early John Woo movie with the improbable title "Last Hurrah for Chivalry."
This is a
martial arts movie, and the ending features two good guy swordsmen fighting one bad guy swordsman, and this sword fight just goes on and on and on and on. And there's a lot of similarities between that fight and the Episode One fight. And knowing that George Lucas loves the old samurai movies, I can't help but wonder if how much of an influence Last Hurrah of Chivalry was on Phantom Menace. That, and I just like saying the title, Last Hurrah of Chivalry.
That is a good one.
Well, it's like bonus points for, we talked about the Star Wars prequel trilogy twice in this podcast.
And nice.
I remember the last time that's ever come up, so.
And in case anyone cares, the other two on my list were Batman and Robin versus Mr. Freeze.
Ugh.
and the final battle in Captain Chronos Vampire Hunter.
I don't think we were going to steal, I don't think we were going to usurp you.
So. Yeah.
I think you played your hand nicely there, Mac. All right. Well, that is it for this Black Friday filibuster. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you're not as freezing cold as we are standing in this line. Mac, have we moved up any spots?
No, it's just that thing where everybody in line bunches together.
Ah. Man, I was really hoping to get my hands on that Double Jeopardy DVD starring Tommy Lee Jones. But
yeah, I've been biding my time high-fiving my phone to other people's phones to share playlists.
So. Oh, good. Nice. Sweet. Nice. All right. Well, that is it. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. Mac, take us away.
Excelsior.